Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge, the program where nothing is off topic. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have a very, very special program for you today. In our most recent mini-episode, number 364, we broke down the NFL with my compadre, Kyle Ross, a longtime FDH Lounge dignitary and a veteran and, I would say, legendary Vegas handicapper who joins us every week during the season and the postseason to break down the NFL. Once in a while, we get a chance to do something even beyond that and of an unusual nature, of an additional nature to the segments that we have done with the great Kyle Ross, and it is a pleasure to bring you one of those such segments today. Welcome, everyone, to FDH Lounge, mini-episode number 365. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We've got a tremendous mini-episode for you today, breaking down the NFL playoffs. And the analyst that we have with us today is going to be tremendous to be able to talk football with him. He is somebody who played college football, was a part of two very big programs, Penn State and Miami, albeit he was at Miami before they really kind of blew up. But, again, he was also at Penn State as well. In the pros, the CFL and the USFL, and he spent 1982 into 1983 with the Green Bay Packers. He is best known for his pro wrestling career. He is a multiple-time world champion in pro wrestling. This segment that we're going to be doing today, actually, it's interesting. This is going to be kind of similar to something that we did with one of his friends and coworkers, Brett the Hitman Hart, where he was on with us one time to break down the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're going to be doing something similar to that today as we break down the NFL playoffs heading into the Super Bowl. This is a gentleman who is best known as the total package. I hope it won't be too narcissistic, hashtag, see what I did there, to refer to him today as FDH Lounge guest football analyst, Lex Luger. Lex, welcome back to the program, my friend. How are you today?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on. I don't know if I qualify as an analyst or live up to that lofty introduction, but thanks, man.
Well, you know what? You played the game at a higher level than I would say 99.9% of us, so for those of us who love the game and to delve into it with the X's and O's and the things that we're watching on TV, most of us didn't experience it as you did playing against some of the caliber of guys that you did working your way up to the professional level. So it's a real privilege for us to be able to break it down with somebody who has the eyes that you must have as somebody who was on the gridiron at a pretty good level. I guess we'll start with the AFC and the sense going in here. In our most recent football segment that we did, breaking it down with our regular football analyst, Kyle Ross, we were talking about this back and forth, the notion of, is there anybody that you see that can break up the eventuality, as it appears to be, of a Denver and New England AFC championship game? I might have perhaps thought Cincinnati before Geno Atkins went down, but that guy's one of the best players in the NFL. You've seen that their defense isn't quite the same since. Are there any of the two games this weekend in the AFC that you see making any kind of impact going forward in the playoffs in terms of the winners?
Are you how many guys we get on here? Are you talking to me, Lex?
Yes, I was in terms of your opinion on that, Lex. That was a point that I had made to our analyst that we were talking about yesterday. Kyle Ross, when we were talking about the AFC, he seems to have a little more confidence than I do in the Cincinnati Bengals going forward. But I think I probably subscribe to the notion of a lot of people that the games this weekend really aren't going to much matter in the AFC picture. Do you agree with that or disagree?
Are you saying the eventual you still think any of those four teams in the AFC this weekend are going to be – a factor in the eventual Super Bowl?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, they look like cannon fodder to a lot of us, quite frankly. You know, you've got the Bengals without Geno Atkins. without Hall in the secondary there. I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but my sense is that the games this weekend in the AFC don't seem that impactful. I wonder if you agree with that or if you give a little more credence to some of these teams moving ahead in the playoffs.
Well, you know, they're not as appetizing or exciting as the NFC matchups this weekend, that's for sure. As far as their impact on the AFC eventual Super Bowl team, I can't count any of the four teams out. I'm just not real excited about the matchup for some reason. I don't know why. Do you have any insight on that? And as far as the AFC goes,
you're not alone in that, Lex. Yeah, I think a lot of us are just we're going to watch it, right? Because it's on, and you pretty much have to watch these things if you love football. But yeah, no, you're not alone in not being that worked up by it. And that's, you know, maybe it's just a sense that, you know, you look at New England. I mean, maybe they could be vulnerable without Gronkowski in there next week, you know, but Andy Dalton doesn't have much of a playoff history to really want to hang your hat on, you know, so you have to kind of subscribe to the notion of Cincinnati being able to go in there and get the job done next week if you think New England's not going to be there. So, you know, I would get the sense that it's kind of like, what's the use, right? I mean, we're watching these teams this weekend, but maybe they're not going to have too much of a chance of disrupting that Denver-New England AFC championship game. That's my perspective anyways.
Yeah, there's usually one. I'm with you on that. I agree with you. But usually there's one of these teams on this first weekend that does have an impact. Maybe not go all the way to the Super Bowl, but, and the Chiefs-Colts game, you know, Lux, I'm leaning towards the Colts being at home, and I'm just not really excited about Smith's a good game manager. I love Charles in the backfield. And I just I'm just leaning towards the Colts being at home and having home field advantage. I don't see either one of those teams. Once again, agreeing with you, coming out all the way out of the AFC, I really don't.
Yeah, and that's an opinion. I think that's a very popular opinion, no question. You know, but when you're talking about the team.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, like, go ahead.
No, I had a delay in the phone. You go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. As far as you were talking about a potential surprise team coming out of the first weekend or a team that can really go on a run, they're at home, and I know that they're favored, but they might be kind of a surprise if they went on a run because of where they've come from in the last 6 weeks or so. Do you get the sense that Philadelphia, I mean, it's kind of fitting that it's wild card weekend, right? That they could be a wild card kind of a team as far as how they match up. You know, even with somebody like Seattle, I mean, Seattle looks just about invincible right now, especially at home. But is Philadelphia the one kind of X factor team that you see where you just think, you know, they could throw such chaos into the other team's defense that maybe anything is possible?
Oh, I definitely feel that way. I like what the Eagles have done this year. I'm leaning towards them over the Saints. So, yeah, I definitely think I'm in total agreement with you that with the type of offense they run in the playoffs, I think it's a bit unorthodox, hard to prepare for it sometimes. So I'm sure they have a few wrinkles in there. I love their talent they have on offense. At, you know, wide out and running back, and Foles has done a great job. So yeah, I definitely think the Eagles could stir some things up there in the NFC without a doubt. I definitely favor them over the Saints.
And
the weather, of course, as well. I mean, being at Philadelphia, that's going to be. It's definitely not going to be, I don't know what the forecast is yet specifically, but it's definitely not going to be dome weather.
Absolutely. And teams like New Orleans have a tendency to only really play well at home in the dome in January. So, yeah, that's a very, very good point. And as far as it goes, too, and I have to credit the great Bill Barnwell over at Grantland for this. For anybody that likes reading intelligent football articles and breakdowns, that's one of the best places you can go. His breakdown on the Philadelphia-New Orleans game, I thought this was particularly insightful. They're going to try to establish that fast-paced running game. New Orleans obviously going to try as much as they can in the elements to get the passing game going. But that the potential that Philadelphia has to really kind of disrupt the New Orleans offense when they're on offense, in terms of if you can run the ball a lot, if you can really just dominate that time of possession, maybe you throw Drew Brees out of whack a little bit, because these passing games rely on that kind of timing and rhythm and everything like that. Do you see Nick Foles in the Philadelphia offense possibly playing an important role in sidetracking Drew Brees by trying to break up that rhythm with time of possession?
Oh, I definitely agree with you on that as well. Definitely in a passing attack like New Orleans has, them getting into a rhythm, like you say, and with Philadelphia's offense, if they can eat the clock up, like you say, because their running game's really come on strong. They got some good – their offensive line has really come together. They got some real talent there that's really come together. So, surprisingly, as much as I know that they'd like to really – you know, they tend to a lot of times or run as many plays as they can in a game and really do kind of a hurry-up style. When it comes to NFL playoff football, things change as pronounced as the passing game has become all over the NFL. I still think the old, hit him in the mouth running attack can have an impact, and running and owning the clock in this game, which would be kind of a surprise. But I think Philadelphia, that O line and what they have at running back, I really think that they could dominate the clock, and that would really, in that cold weather, keeping Drew Brees on the bench a lot, I'm in total agreement, could be a real factor.
That's a great point, Lex, because, yeah, when you look at the NFC, the champion from last year, San Francisco, they really fit the bill of what you're talking about establishing that running game and being solid there. They, of course, were Colin Kaepernick into that a whole lot. So does Seattle, the number one seed and the presumptive favorite going into this year's playoffs. And you've got San Francisco going into Green Bay. And it's really kind of interesting because people have talked about the last couple of years. Green Bay, in terms of their style, almost fits the motif of a dome team a little bit more with the way that they play with Aaron Rodgers spreading it around. I mean, if they've got Eddie Lacy this year, they can go physical a little bit more than in the past, but isn't that kind of a weird deal on Sunday where you got San Francisco coming in and in a game where the elements are going to play into it? Doesn't San Francisco's style almost match the weather a little bit better than Green Bay's?
You would think. I agree with that. Kind of the Gore and the Kaepernick at the quarterback, you know, being able to be a rushing threat on any play. But, man, I really like what Green Bay's done while Aaron Rodgers was out developing the running game with Lacy. And I really think now that Rodgers is a game under his belt and with those conditions, I'm leaning towards Green Bay. I really am.
Wow. That's very interesting. Our football analyst Kyle Ross has picked Green Bay also in this game. And, you know, when you go back to last week, when you look at the spread, when they finally put it out there against the Bears, it was remarked upon at the time that Aaron Rodgers could make maybe about a 7-point difference maybe in what the odds makers set for Green Bay's line. I mean, he is just about the most pivotal player in the league right now, is he not?
I watched him in person. I'm out here in the ATL here in Atlanta. Man, was it last year? First time I ever see Aaron Rodgers play in person here at the Dome in Atlanta. And, you know, Matt Ryan's a solid quarterback. I really like Matt Ryan, what he's done here in Atlanta. But you have to see Aaron Rodgers play in person to truly appreciate his ability to make plays on the run, out of the pocket. His demeanor is so incredible. Nothing seems to faze him. I'm not usually that easily impressed, but when I saw him in person and the velocity he gets in that ball made Ryan's arm almost, Ryan doesn't have a weak arm, doesn't have a super strong arm, but look like a pea shooter in comparison. I mean, I was like, wow. I said, that Aaron Rodgers is head and shoulders above any quarterback I've seen play in person in a long time. He's a very special talent. And I don't think he was where he's going to be at Chicago, where he's going to be this week and then being at home. That's why with the addition of a stronger running game now than before he was injured, that once again, I reiterate, that's why I'm leaning towards the Packers. I think San Francisco's got a great squad, but I'm leaning towards the Green Bay here, especially with the elements. Yeah, I know they both play on grass, but the weather's going to be a little different there than San Francisco is used to, for sure.
Well, Rodgers, he's just really, really blessed, and he's a guy where you look at the fact that you can't coach genetics, and it almost kind of takes us back to your squared circle career where it was kind of the same thing. Genetics, the things like that that you bring to it just can't be coached. You either have it or you don't have it. And speaking of which, here, as we're talking about this survey time here, Lex, I want to put a question to you that we put to some of our guests when we're talking about with football previously on the show. Survey time with apologies to your past coworker, Scott Hall. This is a question that I have put to a number of our football analysts as they've come on the show. Ian Eagle, Rick Bucher, who I'm counting for these purposes because he does cover the 49ers. Nobody has disagreed with my premise yet. We'll see if you're the first one. But my premise is the rivalry of the 2010s, by the time it's all said and done, going to be Seattle and San Francisco. We may actually see them play in the playoffs this year. You're thinking that won't be the case, obviously, if Green Bay wins. But Seattle, San Francisco, is there anything that can really challenge that right now as the rivalry in the league?
Not that I agree with that. Not that I see right now on the immediate horizon. Both programs are just they have a great culture going at both those programs, as I like to call it. And I agree with you guys, through the way things are going with them, I really see them having a really strong rivalry all the way through the decade. I really like what I see at both organizations, for sure.
Okay.
So I'm in agreement there, in accordance.
All right, so it stays unanimous. Yeah, I haven't had anybody yet who has disagreed with the theory. I'm always wondering if somebody's going to be the first one, but as you look at it here with Seattle, and again, for as long as you've been watching football and as we alluded to previously, playing it at some high levels here, your frame of reference, I'm particularly curious to ask you this. When you look at Seattle, the things that really kind of jump out at you, obviously the pass defense, the home field advantage, and, you know, you've competed in front of some large and loud crowds yourself, Lex. I think that's an apples-to-apples comparison, perhaps. But, yeah, when you're looking at I mean, you know, is Seattle, are they – is there anything in recent history that comes to mind as far as comparing to that combination of the pass defense and the home crowd? They just look like they're indomitable up there.
Yeah, I mean, that down the stretch here, they showed a couple little chinks. But overall, in the big picture, like we've just been talking about now, what they got going on there and the talent, like you said, in the secondary and really overall defensively and what they do in offense, I love what Wilson's done at quarterback and just the way he runs that offense. And I really like what they're doing. They're going to be very difficult to beat with home field all the way through here and not to be derailed, not be the Super Bowl team out of the NFC. Without a doubt, I agree.
Yeah, they really have such a deck stacked in their favor by what they were able to do in the regular season. And you're right, Arizona came in there in December when they still had a chance to make the playoffs and really able to put a little chink in the armor. But Seattle, when it has counted, nobody's really beaten them there. It's very interesting about Russell Wilson and about the possibility of this year's Super Bowl matchup, because right about now, everybody's thinking this could be the first time since the Colts and the Saints a couple of years ago when both number one seeds make it through. A lot of times that has not happened, obviously, but Seattle and Denver look like really strong favorites. And if that's the case, it's funny, you got a lot of people saying, and it's unfair, but people make the comparisons, Andrew Luck, the next Manning, Russell Wilson, the next Brady. So two weeks after a Manning-Brady AFC championship game, it could be on the near horizon, you could get Manning against maybe the next Brady in the Super Bowl. How strong of a chance do you think it is that we're going to see Seattle and Denver? I mean, do you think it's as strong of a chance as everybody thinks, or do you think somebody like New England can possibly slip through there, Philadelphia, somebody to play the spoiler role?
I wouldn't count Philadelphia or New England out completely. Of those two teams just named, they definitely could be a factor. But, man, I, I'd like to offering a differing viewpoint, but we're pretty much in sync on so many things here today. I definitely, like most, feel that just the way this season has come about and shaped up, that Manning, who knows how many more seasons he has left. And, you know, so many things can happen in the NFL. We've seen with injuries. We saw that here in Atlanta. And, I mean, who would have thought what would happen to the Houston Texans? Now, I wouldn't see that happening with the Peyton Manning team next year. But I don't think he plans on playing that many more seasons. And I think it's going to be a special year for him at this stage of his career. I think his teammates are going to rally around him knowing that as well. He has just incredible leadership abilities. I really think that they're going to come out of the AFC, and I believe they're going to win the Super Bowl, Denver, this year. And take nothing away from Seattle, but Wilson's going to have a lot more cracks at it. Like we just talked about with what they're going to be doing as far as dominating the AFC, I think Wilson's going to have to get possibly a few more shots at being in the Super Bowl. So I definitely agree with you on most everything you said here. And my pick would be, in that matchup, would be definitely Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos for, I think, a lot of the factors. So when you match up the talent sometimes, I think there's going to be an X factor there with Peyton Manning being at this stage of his career and such a legacy he's going to be leaving. I think this would be one more part of his legacy, winning a Super Bowl this year.
Well, that will be very interesting in the cold and most likely snow of the Meadowlands just about a month from now. And, again, a lot of times the consensus is the consensus because it's right. Now, the consensus is not always wrong. So you and I agreeing on a lot of these points and agreeing with a lot of the conventional wisdom today doesn't necessarily mean that we're wrong. It may just mean that it's as obvious on some of these points as we tend to think it is. You mentioned the Houston Texans. I am chagrined to note that they were my AFC favorite going into the year. I wasn't completely alone, so I'm not as embarrassed as I could otherwise be. But, yeah, that was a historic collapse. They have, of course, signed away Bill O'Brien from Penn State. And I'd be derelict if I didn't get your thoughts on that, Lex, as far as, again, you having been a part of the Penn State program during the Joe Paterno era back in the day. And thoughts on what they're going to do for a replacement. Bill O'Brien gave this off-the-record interview to a newspaper guy that kind of came out. I guess it was cleared to come out after the fact that he took another job, where he was talking about the pressure of dealing with the Paterno loyalists and trying to be his own man versus pleasing the loyalists and honoring the heritage. What do you think is going to be the balance in terms of getting a new guy in there and some of the demands that are really almost kind of unique as far as, you know, continuing to rehabilitate the Penn State image to where it used to be versus being your own man? Are there any guys that you think in particular may be up to that job?
Well, it's definitely still, in spite of everything that happened there, with, like you talked about, the support of that program and the alumni and the culture there in Happy Valley, I definitely feel that that program is going to be in good standing, obviously long-term. I think O'Brien did a great job. I think we all agree on that for the time he was in there. And I also feel he served a good purpose kind of for the next guy to come in my opinion, because when you got a guy like Paterno, no matter how you feel about the circumstances at the end there, he was such a epic figure there in Happy Valley. It's almost nice to have if you're going to have a segue guy who ended up taking this job with the NFL, I feel that's actually a pretty cool thing that happened for the Nittany Lion program. The best was made out of a really bad situation. And I think from here on out, the next guy who comes in can really, I think, come in and establish maybe his own culture within the Nittany Lion precedent program that's there. Maybe a Shiano from Tampa, you know, because he did such a great job at Rutgers. Who knows? I mean, somebody's going to really dig in, stick their teeth in, and take the program to the next level where it can get back to where it was at one time with Paterno. So I think the Nittany Lion program is looking in pretty good shape at this point. I mean, when you look at what happened, I mean, they really are a lot further along than I think any of us would have thought.
Absolutely. Yeah, Bill O'Brien left things better than he found them, no question about that. And that's a very great point that you made, too, that in the eyes of history, when you look at the interim period, if you will, between the Paterno era and whatever the era is that comes next, the bridge sort of purpose that Bill O'Brien served in these 2 years. That's very, a very interesting point by you, Lex, and I really tend to agree with it. Something else that I'd like to pick your brain about as well, since we're talking to you today, and this comes from having seen a bunch of shoot interviews on the internet and having been checking out some things. In light of our last conversation, some things we were talking about everything with you before you reached the point of being saved and some of the troubled times that you went through, something I found to be very, very interesting, I want to get your thoughts on this, is that I have not come across any instances, and I spend a decent amount of my spare time when I'm just puttering around the place listening to some of these shoot interviews, I really haven't heard a bad word about you from any of your past coworkers, and these are people who are bad-mouthing other coworkers at the drop of a hat. So I wonder how much that has to do with, as we talked about previously, you might have been maybe the least political big star of the last 30 years. You were a guy that, again, heeded everything that Hiro Matsuda taught you. It's very interesting also that Hulk Hogan was a Hiro Matsuda pupil, and he certainly doesn't have the same reputation in that regard, but I wonder how much of it is, if you're not a political guy, pretty much everybody's going to like you, regardless of any other things that may be going on in there, if they perceive that you're not a threat in terms of backstabbing them or anything like that. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
Well, I wasn't aware of the statement you just made overall, but you know, I don't follow a lot of the interviews maybe as closely as you or some other people have. I'm not as informed, let's say. That's fabulous to know. Must be God's shield of protection around me, because man, you'd think there'd be some, you'd be in the entertainment / wrestling business, usually just out of controversy alone, you don't really feel that way. There's people blasting people, so that's pretty remarkable, actually. I really can't explain it. I think maybe they're so amazed and happy that I'm still alive after my story that they don't want badmouth me. Maybe there's a little empathy there, a little sympathy and empathy.
I thought it was interesting, and I wanted to call it to your attention because I had a feeling that you were probably unaware of it, but every time I hear your name come up, it's either a neutral thing, like they're telling a story, and oh yeah, and Lex Luger was there, and so-and-so, or whatever, and there's no editorial comment attached to it, or somebody will be really putting you over, and you know, oh yeah, and I was hanging out with Lex, and you know, what a great guy, and everything, so it's really, really interesting to me, because you get folks on there, and the first ones that come to my mind as I'm thinking back on these, Kevin Nash and X-Pac, I mean, they do not hesitate to bury other guys that they felt like deserved it. So it was just kind of striking to me because, you've described yourself as being kind of a troubled figure, maybe even more so towards the end of your active wrestling career with WCW, but you alluded to some other things throughout, and it was just kind of funny, reconciling that with what was apparently your level of popularity with these guys.
Yeah, you know, I always, even at my worst, I tried to keep it as professional as I could at the buildings and arenas away from my well-publicized struggles in my personal life outside of wrestling. And Matsuda had and a lot of the guys that I was brought in with had a big influence on that. So I'm very thankful for that. And thank you for those kind words about that. I mean, I wasn't really even aware of that. I feel like I have a pretty good relationship with all the guys now when I see them. So I had a good feeling about that. But thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that. And I think that's what I really love about America. I think in general, not just the guys in wrestling or in sports. I mean, I'm sure you've seen a lot of other athletes when somebody falls down, man, and falls from grace, I think when you take responsibility for it, which I hope I have, and you're genuine about it, and you're thankful that people and you're getting a second chance, I think it's amazing how I think in our country and our culture in sports and in entertainment and other things that people give you a second chance, and they start to root for you. And I'm amazed by it. and thankful for it and have gratitude about it at the same. It's called grace. And I've been allowed so much of that. So thank you very much for that. That makes me feel good. I appreciate that.
Oh, sure. I just wanted to let you know that because, like I said, you may not spend as much of your time listening to shooter interviews as perhaps some of the rest of us, so I just wanted to pass that along. But, yeah, I think you're probably right about that, and that people have responded to your good intentions and everything that you've done to really turn things around, as we talked about with your last appearance on the program here. The one thing that I guess I forgot to ask about the last time, and I certainly wanted to this time along those lines, was your participation with the Hardcore Pawn Show and a ring robe that was able to fetch $3,500 for charity. So I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that a little bit more, because I know you've always got some good charitable endeavors going on and positivity and trying to give back. So what was the story with that, and how was that robe able to help people?
That was just thrown together as a buddy of mine called the Great Mudini. And people can look him up. He's done stunts. He did this thing where he got pulled by Camaro and it didn't work and he almost got killed. And he has this burning desire to become a reality TV star here out in the Atlanta area. He's a good friend of mine, great guy. And he's just dying to get a break. He goes, "Man, Lex, maybe would you mind if I said that I can get a former world champion wrestler on there with me, because they've never done it before, to auction off something for charity?" It was all his idea, the Great Mudini. And he said, "Would you do it with me, Lex?" And I love the guy, and I love his passion for wanting to get in real TV. And believe me, I'd never seen the show, but I'd heard about it, of course. But I'd never seen the show. I watched it the week before I was supposed to go up there to film, and I got on the phone with some of my mentors and my pastor and go, "And there's quite a bit of cussing and all that stuff going on there, and that's not my image. I like to wouldn't want to put out there these days." I go, "Man, you think it's all right?" I mean, to go up there, and they were laughing and go, "Lex, those are your peaks, man. Go be a light in the dark." So I was like, "Okay, you're giving me the green light." So Michael and I drove up there from Atlanta and pulled in the parking lot, man, and it was hot out that day. I came in there all sweaty, and those guys were so nice. They treated us incredible. I don't even think they cussed in the segment. And even the big, they get these ginormous bodyguards there. And they go, "Man, it was a nice change of pace here today when you were here. Something about the room was really a lot calmer." And I go, "Man, that might," I told them, "well, that might hurt Ray. He might not want me back again." But we had a lot of fun. Those guys were great. And we had a really good time with that, and raised money for a really good cause. And they were really nice with us. I had a good time. It was a lot of fun.
That's tremendous.
I have on my resume.
That's excellent. Well, as we had covered the last time you were on the program at greater length, again, just God bless you for giving back, Lex, and for setting a great example for everybody of how you can turn your life around and be out there helping the community. And it's really just been such a tremendous story with everything that you've been able to do. And again, we relished this conversation with you today, as was the case previously. I'd love to have you back on to catch up on things, Lex, and thank you so much for breaking down the football with us today. What a treat that was.
Oh, thank you. It's been an honor. You guys have a great weekend.
Wonderful. Appreciate it. You have a great weekend as well, Lex. Thank you for being on, and thank you all for tuning in, everybody. FDH Lounge, mini episode number 365.